From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at politics and the state budget, and only the state budget, usually, the politics of the state budget and the state budget. Mm. And did I mention we also talk about the state budget? Yes.
Burritos. And burritos.
The budget burrito. Do you know how many people have mentioned that to me this week?
No.
None. I'm John Myers from KQED. That's Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly. And so we're back here talking about what's been going on this past week here at the state capitol. And really, we're full into two kinds of modes, it seems like. Legislative mode and bills and pieces of legislation, which we'll talk about on some other podcasts, because that's kind of complicated, depending on what bill you're talking about.
Well, especially if you don't read the bills.
Yes. Well, how can you read all of them? They're like
2,200. No, you read digests to try to get a sense of what's going on.
Still, but they're like 2,200 bills.
Yeah.
That's a lot for one reporter, or two.
Two, right. I'll split them.
So we'll stick to the state budget, since there's a lot going on in that, and we have an election. What are we now? 6 weeks? Five and a half weeks?
Yeah. Five.
Clock is ticking. Yep. Yeah. Clock is ticking on a May 19th special election. Six budget-related ballot measures on that ballot. Props one Alpha through one Foxtrot. I'm just trying.
I'm so glad you said Foxtrot.
Foxtrot?
I thought you were going to say something.
No,
else.
No. It's a different kind of podcast. Okay. So, all right. Well, let's talk about what's going on this week. You wrote in this week's Capitol Weekly, out today on Thursday when we're taping this.
And
CapitolWeekly.net.
Thank you.
Capitol with an A, with an O. Sorry. Oh, I'm Capitol Notes with an A, but it's confusing. Okay. So you wrote about some of the interesting alignments and strategies behind some of these ballot measure campaigns. What are we seeing?
Well, this is sort of an extension of what we talked about last week. You know, we saw the governor today out at the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little bit later. But there's a real question about what the governor's role will be in selling these ballot initiatives. It is clear that they're going to the yes side is going to try to sell them all as a package, as a reform package.
The burrito
approach. I don't know, but some of the chefs, the potential cooks are...
You're trying.
No. I'm going to scrap that one.
How about customers? No, not customers, because that's the voters.
Let's just scrap it.
I'm staying with it, but go ahead.
But this week we saw Assembly Speaker Karen Bass told us that her caucus has supported the other initiatives, but not Proposition 1A, the spending
limit. Yeah, you guys were reporting that they had a long, long caucus meeting behind closed doors and that they're still divided over the spending cap over Prop 1A.
And let the record show that only three people voted against it, and those three lost their chairmanships of assembly committees for voting against it. So even though they all voted for it to put it on the ballot, a lot of people don't like it, and that's because organized labor does not like it. Service Employees Union thinks that it will damage the safety net, the state safety net. And a lot of Democrats up here think that Prop 1A will have lasting consequences that will be disastrous for the state.
And so we really don't know. You know, it's funny, on the podcast last week we said, well, by next week, clearly we'll have a much clearer sense of who's lining up where on this thing. We've had a few, you know, with no offense to them, but a few bit players kind of line themselves up this week. But the real power behind California elections really still is somewhat fuzzy as to how that's going to come down.
Well, and when you're talking about power, you're talking about money.
Right.
You know, and there is this sort of disingenuous dance that's going on. I mean, the service employees have been very upfront. They oppose it. They have a real reason for perhaps not wanting that opposition to manifest as a no campaign. If this goes down, if these measures go down, there's going to be an immediate $6 billion hole in the budget. We're hearing now that revenue forecast might be another $4 billion short. So we're talking about another $10 billion hole that we'd probably have to fill with cuts. And those cuts would probably come out of the parts of the budget that the service employees are trying to protect. That's the calculation that they have to make internally. And then on the other side, you've got Republican opposition, and you've got two very wealthy Republican candidates for governor, the insurance commissioner, Steve Poizner, and former eBay executive Meg Whitman. Whitman has been very outspoken in her opposition to 1A. Poizner, a little more ambiguous, although today, he sent out a series of very confusing right. press releases.
Well, but apparently he talked to some Republicans earlier in the week and said, you know, I'm really against it and I may try to do whatever, because there was something on the Republican blog, the Flash Report,
right.
that alluded to that too.
But, anyway. And when I spoke to his campaign spokesman yesterday, he said very clearly that Poizner had not taken a position on the ballot initiatives.
Hmm, okay.
So, and the question is,
let's one more. Tom Campbell, who's the third candidate,
right.
actually came out in support of
right.
the governor's budget burrito. Ha-ha.
Right. But for the whole enchilada, if you will. No.
Mexican food galore.
but you know, Whitman and look, there's I think a wide agreement that this package, this initiative, this burrito, if you will, could be pushed over with a feather. I mean, that it would not take much of a no campaign to blow up the entire package, and it would take $1 to $2 million to do the whole thing. And that's chump change for Steve Poizner or Meg Whitman. And so the question is, you know, will any funded opposition materialize during the special election? That was the question we asked last week, and we still don't have an answer.
Hmm. So the governor spoke at the Commonwealth Club on the day we're taping this on Thursday. And you can I think you can actually hear it archived on our station's website at kqed.org, because we play the Commonwealth Club events and we
right.
put it out live today. But so in his comments, he kind of took a whack at the left and the right and the, you know, somewhat seeming opposition to this thing, you know, with the right. He was talking about the tax increases, saying that they're being, I think his words were, disingenuous by, you know, saying that you could have done something other than raise taxes in some fashion. And on the left, I think the line was something to the effect of, if you only wanted taxes and you didn't want to do any of the cuts, and he's referring now to the budget more, but still, it's like you're living on a hippie commune
right.
or something like that.
Right.
I mean, you know, some kind of little, I don't know, maybe too cute by half kind of line.
It's vintage Schwarzenegger.
Vintage Schwarzenegger. Yeah, exactly. Which, you know, it's kind of part of the legacy issue. And, you know, trying to chart his own path there in the middle. But I think the real question still is, you know, let's go back to what you wrote in the newspaper this week about this notion of who fronts the campaign. Who's
right.
the image of the campaign? If not Arnold Schwarzenegger, then who? Well, I mean, certainly it would be ideal to have the people who voters find they really like, teachers,
firefighters,
nurses,
cops,
whoever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, who are those groups so far? Some of the law enforcement community has endorsed it.
Right.
But who are, you know, where is this alliance of other, you know, people that the public might like?
Well,
because they haven't really come down on it yet.
Well, right, and they haven't. And the state council of the California Teachers Association is going to be deciding on these measures later this month. But just because the union doesn't endorse it doesn't mean you can't use a teacher in your campaign ads. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we're talking about salesmanship here. And, you know, the other thing about this is that we haven't talked about is who's going to be voting in this election.
Right.
You know, you talk about the governor taking a whack at the left and the right, and that's fine. You can steer down the middle in a general election. But, I mean, what's the turnout model for a May 19th
special election right.
that has to do with that? There's nothing else on the ballot except for six very confusing ballot measures. And then there's a seventh measure. So I'll say seven confusing ballot measures and a little congressional special election down in Los Angeles.
Well, and because the conventional wisdom, is it not, in California is when you have some kind of non-general election, sometimes it's specials, I guess sometimes it's primaries, but that's not really – let's right. use special election model. In a special election, you know, when you have low turnout, in other words, that you'd mm-hmm. have low turnout, and when you have a low turnout, sometimes you get the – You get the people who are the most consistent voters, who typically are older and sometimes more conservative.
Right.
So that's not exactly if you're doing a campaign toward the middle of the road, that ain't your group.
No, and on the Democratic side, you know, this was the calculation that Gray Davis incorrectly made during the recall, that this was going to be a low turnout election, and so Davis, on the Democratic side, the equation was to play to the base, to the more liberal. And so Davis moved to the left before the recall. So if the far left and the far right are going to be the ones who are going to be turning out, and it's the far left and the far right who don't like these ballot measures, what does that mean for the fate of this burrito?
does the burrito get does the burrito eaten or thrown in the trash?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Sent back.
Something like that.
Something.
And again, you referenced it a moment ago, but it's not a point that we can I don't think we can emphasize it too much, which is the money riding on this, not the campaign money, but the state budget money.
Right.
You got a $5 billion borrowing proposal for the lotteries in Prop 1C, and you've got a few hundred million dollars for the tobacco tax money and the mental health money in Props 1D and E. Mm-hmm. So you've got somewhere on the order of about $6 billion there that could blow a hole in the budget deal just signed. Mm-hmm. Then you've got maybe $4 or $5 billion more that revenues are looking bad. The Ledge Analyst is putting out a new revenue forecast on Friday. We're taping this on Thursday. So those of you hearing this, you may already know what the Ledge Analyst said those numbers are. But we do know from Thursday that the controller, John Chung, put out new cash figures showing that tax revenues for the month of February were almost $1 billion under the January budget forecast. And those numbers are the ones that are in that budget deal. So again, so there's $1 billion right there. So you got real government money and budget and service issues really floating on this campaign. And it gets back to the politics to me for a moment, because you were talking about the Republican candidates for governor, you know, Whitman and Poizner. And I'm just sitting here thinking, like, yes, it might play to their base, and I'm not saying they don't believe that those measures are a bad idea. But it certainly plays to their base. But should they win, for sake of argument, are they not making their job that much harder as governor by knocking something like that down?
Even if
you don't like the proposals, the spending cap would definitely change the dynamic at the Capitol.
Sure. And you'd have, the tax increases that were passed would come off the books sooner, so that there would be another future hole for the future governor. If these things go down, just from a base economic perspective, it's going to be much more difficult. The other part of this, and we wrote a piece in Capital Weekly this week looking at the consequences of what happens if these fail. I mean, we've talked some about the economics of it. Politically, though, if these measures fail, I think this is the end of the Schwarzenegger governorship. I mean, now he has no leverage.
Boy, that's a big one there.
Well,
dun, dun.
I mean, look, he's got no leverage with the Republican Party. He's always prided himself on being able to be a populist spokesman. You look at this would be the second special election that he would have lost, and he's a lame duck. He'd be out of office in a year and a half or so. How is this guy going to have any leverage to do anything in his final months in office, especially when the budget has already been passed? Although, of course, there would be another $10 billion hole, so we'd be back at that. But what does that mean? I mean, would the governor be in a position to make any kind of deal?
But in that case, since we're playing parlor game here for a moment, and we've talked about that the governor may not be the best salesman for this with the public right now, then his fate, his political fate, his legacy fate, largely is in the hands of other people.
Sure. Well, he's been very willing to place his fate in the hands of the people. I mean, he's...
But I mean other people by other parts of the political world trying to figure out how they're going to line up.
Right.
Not the voters per se, which he obviously, has an ongoing admiration for, but I'm talking about his fate. The fate of the measures then are going to rest with a larger political calculation, and therefore, by extension, his own legacy is not necessarily in his hands. He can't. And again, and I don't want to psychoanalyze a person like Arnold Schwarzenegger, because he might come find me across the street.
But you could take him, Myers.
But if you read about his biography, you think about his life, and a man who feels like he has controlled his own destiny and he has made himself into who he is. This is not a case, perhaps, where he really holds enough of the cards. I mean, even if you were to argue that he didn't in years past in political campaigns, this one, you know what I'm saying? By the dynamic of his low popularity numbers and things like that, he really doesn't seem to – he may not be in control of it.
Well, and the difficulty, I mean, in his defense, to his credit, it's very difficult to sell a budget on the ballot. This is why – this, again, is the case for representative democracy instead of direct democracy. Budget deals are compromises, right? Nobody – and the problem with a compromise is that there's a lot in it that everybody hates. And I think you talk to anybody about this budget, there's a lot in it that they don't like. that's a very different mindset. That governing mindset is very different than a campaign mindset, where you're talking about, you know, you have to get somebody to come out to the polls and vote for something. I mean, psychologically, that's very difficult to do. It's very different. And there's a real question of ownership. I mean, who owns these six measures? Certainly the governor does, but he comes with his own liabilities. I mean, I talked to a lot of people on both sides of the campaign this week who say that, you know, when you link these measures to the governor, the numbers go down. So who owns these initiatives? I mean, the teachers union doesn't like big pieces of it.
Well, but let's talk about the legislative leaders. Do they own it?
No. Hmm. I mean, Karen Bass hasn't said, the speaker hasn't said where she is on Prop 1A. Mm-hmm. Daryl Steinberg has
He was
out.
At the event, the very Daryl first
Daryl Steinberg
event.
Was at the event. He supports them all, but he hasn't raised money for these initiatives yet. He's not out there, you know, shaking the tree. And if he does raise money, does it go through the Schwarzenegger committee? Does it go through another committee? Because, you know, both Bass and Steinberg have real concerns about the messaging that the governor is doing, trying to sell this as reform. I mean, I've talked to, you know, to people close to both of them who say, look, we've already had a special election focused on reform led by Arnold Schwarzenegger. We did that in 2005. That did not work out so well. So there's a lot of disagreement, a lot of problems, and not a lot of time.
Well, and on the subject of messaging, something that I noticed this week, and it, you know, there will be more discussion about this during the campaign, but I'm forgetting my days now. On Tuesday, boy, isn't it funny how the week, I can't, you know, 2 days ago and I can't. On Tuesday, the governor did what was kind of an impromptu quick Q&A with a few reporters, me and a few others who were standing on the lawn of the Capitol after he looked at this hybrid car.
Yeah,
he looked at a hybrid car, and then he came over and we asked him about the budget and the special election. But on the special election, the governor said something that caught my ear that I had to come back and, you know, be that kind of pain in the rear end where I pulled out all the audio from the archives to compare comments. The governor said something to the effect of why Prop 1A, its spending cap, was important so that we can never spend more money again, so that we can never do this again, you know, so that we never can get in this situation again. This is the reform to make sure we never get in this fix again. And you know what audio I went to pull out?
Prop 58.
2004, yeah. Proposition 58, the balanced budget amendment, which said, and basically I'm almost quoting, the state must have a balanced budget. Okay, good.
Right. Tearing up the credit card.
Yeah, well, and not even the credit card line, but going back and pulling out that audio, this we'll never get in this again by doing this. We'll never have these problems again. You know, we'll never be able to spend more than we take in. Well, and I wonder, at what point does the public start to remember all of this and start to not feel like, didn't we do this? Didn't
exactly.
we do this already? It's
exactly.
Boy who cried wolf kind of phenomenon.
And I think that gets to the core of the I don't want to put words in their mouths, but I think that gets to the core of the concerns from some Democratic leaders about the messaging of the campaign is just that there's a ring of familiarity to this campaign messaging, and it's not something that people remember liking very much.
And I think the other thing too, and this is a conversation with at least one smart person around town this week, and I'm sure you've talked to people in the same way, which is that the early sampling of opinions of voters and the public by people who are trying to figure out in campaign world how this works shows an electorate that really is consumed with their own personal problems with the economy and their jobs and everything.
Right.
And the question is, how much bandwidth does the public have to absorb the state's problem, the collective state government's problems, while their own personal problems are so bad?
In other words,
you're telling me the state's got this problem. Look at mine. I can't pay my bills.
Right. And what does this feel like? I mean, and you look at what's going on nationally with billions of dollars in new corporate bailouts being approved, you know, seemingly every week. Does that affect how people perceive these measures? Does this feel like some sort of, you know, when you read the ballot argument for Prop 1C, the lottery borrowing, is like, does that feel like a bailout, like another corporate bailout that, you know, that or a government bailout that voters don't want to approve, that people, I think, are getting tired of? This is why I think there's such an urgency on the part of the administration to freeze out any opposition, because all of this stuff is, if anybody wanted to spend any money hammering that any of these messages home, this whole house of cards would collapse. And there's real concern that that these measures won't pass.
But and you don't have a lot of time either way, either to spend money for or against.
Right.
I mean, you really are against the clock. And even then, would you spend a lot of money on TV ads on an election where you don't get big turnout, or would you do direct mail or something? Or
but it's always harder to pass something than it is to get something killed. I mean, that's just a rule of ballot initiative
politics. Because the default measure usually is no.
Sure.
Or the default position, I should say, of a voter can be no.
Yep.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. Let's talk quickly about another budget-related issue that's going to be a hot battle next week, I think. Tuesday the 17th is kind of the center point of this, but we had some discussion on it this week. Let's see if I can make this not too complicated. So
good luck in the budget deal,
yeah, really, good luck. In the budget deal that was signed in February, there was a provision that said, while we're not balancing this budget with the notion that we're getting money from the federal stimulus plan, we know we're going to get federal stimulus help. And so if we get enough money that we can count towards general deficit relief from the federal government, then some of the least desirable options in this budget can go away. Some of the tax increases, some of the spending cuts. Now, in what I think is marginal capital parlance, marginally understandable, that means that those options would be triggered off.
Right.
That actually, I think trigger makes me think something else.
No, the reporting has been so confusing and so
And I've tried to not use the term trigger in any of my news reporting because I don't think that's a very – that the image isn't right for the public.
Yeah.
It's a cancellation. It's erasing. It's ending. It's
or
whatever it
backfilling
is.
Backfilling.
Well, backfill even though is like one of those words that gets used in government all the time. So the question is, how much of that federal stimulus plan, because we got a new analysis of it this week, we got more than one, but we got one from the Ledge Analyst, the nonpartisan, you know, sayer of truths around the Capitol. But how much of that federal stimulus money that's coming to California can be counted as general deficit relief? Now, the governor's administration a few weeks ago said they think the number is $8 billion. Now, the magic number in the budget was 10. In other words, if we got 10, we could cancel some of those bad budget options, taxes and cuts.
Right.
Governor said we're going to get governor's administration said we're going to get 8. So therefore, we don't get enough. The Ledge analysts seem to agree with that this week, saying we're going to get 8. But the Ledge analysts did leave some wiggle room that I thought was important, some nuance that said it's not altogether clear because how do you count these dollars? Which way do you count them? And I think you're going to hear – so next week – now all of that as prologue. Next week, the governor's budget director, Mike Genest, and the state treasurer, Bill Lockyer, are scheduled to meet. This was part of the budget deal too, which I love. This was language that was in the budget trailer bills. Lockyer and Genest will meet. They have been given the power to make the official determination, did we reach the threshold? If they agree and we did, then great, some of those tax increases, some of the personal income taxes, and some of the spending cuts go away.
Right.
And most of them are social services programs. Right. If we didn't reach it, then they stay. What if Lockyer and Genest disagree? I mean, that's not terribly resolved.
Then they'll set up a 900 number and people can call in.
Well, the way I heard it described to me today is if they that what they're being asked is to agree to cancel those budget solutions. And if they don't agree, then the budget solutions stay in place. I don't know about that. And I also don't know.
To the runner.
And I also don't And I also don't know how you calculate the numbers. And you heard when the Ledge Analyst put these out in the Assembly Budget Committee on
Ledge Analyst was
On Tuesday. It was the same day. Yeah, it was on Tuesday. Same day I was thinking of before.
The Budget Project did their numbers on
Monday. Yeah, the California Budget Project, which does a lot of advocacy for low and middle income Californians, seems to think you can easily get there, that you can get at least $10 billion.
Right.
And again, it all depends on how you calculate the numbers. But there was a lot of debate among rank and file members of the Assembly Banking Budget Committee that about this trigger. And you and I started to hear on both sides some people thinking that the trigger could be met and they wanted it to be met, although Republicans are very hesitant to do it because they think it just increases spending that therefore you've got a problem with.
That will continue in future years as
right.
well.
But, you know, but again, if you were able to get rid of some of these solutions, some of them are tax increases, which probably, you know, Republicans would be happy about. Yeah. I think this is going to be I don't think this battle is going away next week.
No, I don't think so either. I think that regardless of what gets decided, I mean, we've seen a lot of these things end up in court. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility that this could as well. And, you know, there are so many numbers flying around right now. I mean, it's very difficult. You know, you wrote about this week, and John Howard did most of the reporting for us. But even reading those stories and trying to make sense of them, you know, reading the various newspaper accounts, it's there's not a lot of clarity on this. I mean, you know, you've got Gene Ross at the California Budget Project saying one thing. You've got Mac Taylor saying another. You've got the administration saying a slightly different thing. And then all sorts of numbers
flying
around. And then
legislators flying their ideas in. And I feel like some of it, you know, so much of it goes to the Byzantine nature of the California budget process. I mean, it's just all these little bells and whistles and moves and, you know, slot here and slot that. And, you know, for example, one great discussion in that Assembly Budget Committee hearing was, well, state revenues are bad. We were just talking about that a moment ago. We think that revenues could be down again. If the revenues go down, that could reduce the guaranteed amount for education.
Right.
But that means that you could spend more of the federal money on education purposes, which would therefore spend more than $8 billion toward deficit relief. It might spend $10 billion, which would, ta-da, trigger off cuts and taxes.
But,
again,
but isn't there a timeline on the federal money that determinate? Well, I know with the Medi-Cal portion.
Medi-Cal and
is.
Transportation have very short deadlines in federal stimulus money. There are more deadlines on that. The education money, there aren't as tight a deadlines. But again, all of this becomes a very subjective dance as to
luckily
how you figure it out. And it becomes political, which comes back to it, because how, you know, where you stand politically on the cuts and the taxes.
Well, and luckily when it comes to moving numbers and pots of money around, budgeteers in California in both parties are very have a lot of experience. I'd say they're ahead of the curve and more sophisticated than most at doing these kinds of things.
So in the campaign mode, we've got a budget burrito. And the budget in the Capitol, is that the enchilada, or should we pick a different?
It's all giving me indigestion.
Last week, you said you were here at the birth of a metaphor. Now you may be here at the death.
At the beating of a dead horse.
at the mixing
of a metaphor.
Death of said metaphor.
Yes.
Well, maybe by next week we'll know more about who's lined up where on the campaigns. I mean, do you think we will? Let's end that way. Do you think some of the big players that we're waiting to see, the people who have money?
What's the date today? The 14th?
Today is today's the 12th. Friday's
12th.
The 13th.
No, I don't think. I think March 23rd is going to be a pivotal day.
Why?
I think that's when you might see some action from labor groups.
Why March 23rd?
I think that's the date that the State Council of SEIU
okay.
is meeting. And the Teachers Association is meeting around that.
Sometime around
well.
That time, too.
Yeah. The teachers probably won't come out against 1A. They might go neutral. It's probably not going to. They wouldn't spend money against it, I don't think. I think that the service employees that's a whole other story there.
Well, and the last time you wrote about it, you got lots of phone calls, you said. So
I did.
So you've just set yourself up more phone calls.
At least they're reading and listening.
Budget burrito goes on. I just can't let go of it. I can't let go of it. Budget burrito.
You're on a roll. It's a burrito joke.
All right. Enough burrito jokes. That's it for this week. We'll see what happens by this time next week. For Anthony York at Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. See you next time.